You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
Welcome to Field Talk, an Ecological Society of America podcast exploring the work, perspectives, and field experiences of researchers, authors, and other members of the ecological community. I'm your host, Katie Klein. Today I'm speaking with Greg Goldsmith, a tropical plant ecologist from the University of California, Berkeley, who has been working on an interactive educational website called Canopy in the Clouds, which explores a tropical montane cloud forest in Costa Rica. Greg is the host of Canopy in the Clouds videos, in which he explains the climate, landscape, wildlife, and processes found throughout the forest. Welcome to Field Talk, Greg.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me to speak with you.
So where exactly is the tropical montane cloud forest located?
So tropical montane cloud forests are actually scattered all over the world. We know to some extent that there's little pieces of cloud forest in Africa and little pieces of montane cloud forest in South America and, of course, here in Central America, as well as in Southeast Asia.
What makes this particular area special in terms of biodiversity, et cetera?
Tropical montane cloud forests are renowned for their biodiversity, but also really for their endemism. There's a tremendous number of species that occur in these forests that don't occur anywhere else on the planet. And that ranges from the plants and particularly the epiphytes to the animals. And I think we don't even necessarily have a grasp yet on how many different species of insects are living in these types of forests.
Would you mind briefly explaining what epiphytes are?
Epiphytes are plants that use other plants as a host. So they grow on top of or on branches or in little crevices on trees, for instance. And they're often mosses or lichens or ferns or bromeliads. Orchids are a very famous example. Most orchids are epiphytic. They grow on other plants, as well as in tropical forests, a lot of trees. So you might have a bird that disperses the seed from a tree that you normally associate as being a huge canopy tree, and that seed germinates on a branch in the canopy and grows into its own tree. It's actually quite spectacular.
It's very cool. And this area is known for its orchids in particular.
Orchids seem to prefer very, very specific microclimates. They tend to grow in places that have very high humidity, and they don't necessarily do very well in very high temperatures. And so here you have a montane ecosystem, so it's a little bit cooler, and you have this immersion in this cloud layer for the vast majority of the year. And so orchids flourish in this environment.
So you briefly mentioned some of the pollinators, birds that are in the area, but are there monkeys, and what other types of animals would you see while in the canopy?
When we're in the canopy, I'm constantly surprised by what we see, and I think that's one of the amazing things about this ecosystem. Monkeys, and there are literally hundreds of species of birds, some other small mammals that are generally quite elusive in the canopy, but no shortage of birds floating around up there.
Can you briefly describe the different climates that might be found at the various elevations? Say I was hiking up the mountain, what kind of things would I see?
So tropical montane cloud forests are a function of this big offshore wind that occurs over the Caribbean that carries this moist air off of the Atlantic. And that moist air travels over Costa Rica and hits this big mountain range, the Cordillera de Tilarán. As it hits that mountain range, that air rises and cools off and condenses into a cloud layer, and it gets pushed right over the top of the Continental Divide and down the Pacific Slope. That leaves this really amazing environmental gradient along the Pacific Slope. The top of the gradient is incredibly wet and immersed in cloud basically all year round. 9.5 times out of 10, you'd find that that Continental Divide it's soaking wet and windy and cloudy. And as you come down the Pacific Slope, you see that it gets gradually drier and drier and drier until you actually reach tropical dry forests at sea level. And so what you're really talking about is this gradient in cloudiness, which makes a really amazing system to work in.
So what type of plant and animal life would you find in the area that's immersed with clouds that you were describing?
Just the sheer biomass of epiphytes. There's no surface untouched by epiphytic growth on these plants. It's very, very green. And as you move down the Pacific slope in elevation, you find that because it's drier and because there's less cloud cover, there is a decrease in the epiphyte biomass. And actually, one of the really interesting implications of this is that you can start to imagine how epiphytic communities would change if climate change were to have an effect on the frequency and the distribution and the intensity and the duration of cloud cover in these forests.
Do you have any stories from your field work in the forest?
I think that, like most tropical biologists, a lot of the stories in the field arise from these times when you've gone out expecting to take 2 or 3 hours to finish something, and you are still in the field 7 or 8 hours later. And 7 or 8 hours later, when perhaps you haven't quite planned to bring lunch or you haven't brought enough water, that's when the forest starts to play tricks on you. Things that would normally sound very, very small sound much, much bigger. I'm not sure that other people would corroborate this, but I find that at the end of a long day, a hummingbird just doesn't sound like a hummingbird. It sounds more like a grizzly bear, which any logical scientist would immediately say that there's no grizzly bears in montane cloud forests, in this part of the world at least. But the forest has a funny way of messing with your mind when you're really tired and worn out from a long day.
Have you ever gotten so fatigued that you've camped out there?
I've never spent the night in the forest without originally planning, and I hope not to do that. I travel pretty well prepared for finding my way out, though obviously if I were lost and it were late, I would camp out instead of trying to move. As a plant physiologist, what plants are doing overnight is actually somewhat important. So we do have a tendency to take a lot of pre-dawn measurements because that's when plants have re-equilibrated with soil water. And so I've spent a lot of very early mornings in the forest.
What is your favorite part about the forest?
I think that after 7 years of working in the tropics, I am still absolutely blown away by the sheer quantity of green that you see when you first walk into one of these forests. It's so green. I just can't believe how green it is. As you're walking through the forest, I'm still amazed and still totally enthralled by the idea of being able to see something that I've never seen before every single day. And that's a function of the incredible biodiversity that exists in this part of the world.
How do you access the canopy? And more specifically, if you go onto the Canopy in the Clouds website, you have a lot of video actually where you're speaking above the canopy and things like that. How did you shoot those?
So we access the canopy very carefully and with a lot of very specialized training. And we do so with rope and harness techniques that are developed for commercial arborists. Those are the least invasive techniques that we have. As for the volume of camera equipment that you see there, that is the ingenuity of my collaborators who have figured out ways to basically rig their equipment in the canopy, and that is a very, very delicate process. The equipment is obviously very expensive. Dropping it is not an option. One of the really tremendous challenges of creating footage in the canopy is that you can't necessarily keep yourself still in one place. So you're on a rope, and you're not necessarily touching anything. So you can be free spinning in air. And so there's lots of creative moments where you have to figure out some way to brace yourself so that the camera is still enough to take the image. That I owe completely to the creativity of my collaborators, Drew Fulton and Colin Witherell.
Where does the name Canopy in the Clouds come from?
The name Canopy in the Clouds, to be honest with you, I had to send Drew an email to ask him where the name Canopy in the Clouds came from. And he informed me that the answer is that he likes alliteration. But I think that this is an allusion to one of the central features of this forest, which is that the canopy is almost always immersed in this beautiful layer of clouds.
And what advantages do you see to internet access and being able to make websites more interactive and being able to actually take the students with you into the canopy while you're explaining?
I think that science it's a rapid process right now. We look at the volume of science that is being produced. It's really tremendous. And I think any scientist will agree with me that keeping up with it is very difficult. Having this new form of education where we can interact with students, it changes our capacity to present science. It means that instead of revising an entire textbook, when we learn about something new, we can post it in the next hour. And that means that we put our students at a tremendous advantage for their scientific educations. They can have access to the most current scientific research in a heartbeat, even though we can't put everyone on a plane and bring them to the cloud forest, which would be, of course, my dream. This is a way for them to experience something in a much more immersive manner, as well as a way to really do some tremendous inquiry-based learning with the possibility of some real-time feedback for students, which you can't get out of a textbook.
I think in some ways the website could be more beneficial than being there, because if you can't get up into the canopy, then you're not seeing the whole picture.
I think Canopy in the Clouds, it has a tremendous aspect of adventure to it. That's a result of me stepping back and looking at what I do for a living. I'm a plant physiological ecologist with an interest in how climate change will affect plant distributions. And if I say that, then most people will turn off from the conversation within the first couple of words. And when you step back and look at what I do, I get to climb into the canopy of a cloud forest. And that is something that instantly engages people and creates this avenue for conversation that wouldn't have otherwise existed, because people are curious and they do want to know about this place that they haven't been able to visit.
That sort of leads into my next question, which is, have you ever found that visual communication can be more effective in discussing ecological research than simply explaining the principles?
A picture is worth a thousand words, and we happen to believe that a panoramic picture is worth 10,000 words, and that a video embedded into a panorama is worth 100,000 words. We have an avenue through visual arts to explain a lot of concepts around ecology and the natural world. I am finding in my own research that the more that I can incorporate material directly from Canopy in the Clouds into my presentations, the more people are able to relate to some of the seemingly more esoteric aspects of questions that I ask.
Do you have any future plans for the site or for developing additional interactive sites about ecology?
So one really exciting development around Canopy in the Clouds is that we are debuting in Spanish, which has been a long-standing dream of ours. We believe really firmly that these efforts should benefit the people who most closely interact with these ecosystems, and those students happen to speak Spanish. And so we're very excited to have a partnership with the Tropical Science Center and with Omar Dengo Foundation here in Costa Rica to debut an entire Spanish language version of the website, as well as a new curriculum associated with that.
Well, thank you, Greg, for being on Field Talk today.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That was tropical plant ecologist Greg Goldsmith discussing tropical montane cloud forests and the interactive website Canopy in the Clouds. You can find more information on this edition of Field Talk by visiting ESA's blog, Ecotone, at esa.org/ESA blog. I'm your host, Katie Klein, and this has been Field Talk. Thanks for listening.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.